welcome to another episode of Disrupt. I'm Joyce Femakinwa with Home Healthcare News. Before we jump into my conversation with Tim Arnold, the CEO of Care Advantage, I want to give a shout out to our podcast sponsor, Home Care Homebase. Don't leave money on the table. Outsource your RCM to Home Care Homebase, and we'll help make sure you get paid quickly and accurately for all of the services you provide. Our HCHB Revenue Cycle Services customers enjoy a first pass clean claim rate of 99% and a denial rate of just 2.5%. Best of all, we guarantee net collection rates of 97% for Medicare and 93% for non-Medicare. Expert billing, smooth cash flow, and a better return on every dollar. Learn more at hchb.com. I had the opportunity to talk to Tim about the work Care Advantage is doing with value-based care. Last year, Care Advantage and Anthem launched a pay-for-performance pilot program aimed at caring for Anthem's long-term services and support members. Just by talking to Tim, I could tell that this is a topic that he and his organization are really passionate about. During our conversation, we also get into why value-based care is still relatively rare in the home-based care space, the Searchlight Capital Partners acquisition, and the company's future M&A plans. So let's get into it. Welcome, everybody. Today, I have Tim Arnold from Care Advantage. He is the CEO, and we are going to get into a really interesting conversation today. Tim, thank you so much for joining us. Where are you joining us from?
Yeah, and pleasure to join. Thanks for the opportunity here to speak with you and the listeners. And yeah, calling, recording here from Richmond, Virginia.
So to get started, Care Advantage is one of the largest in-home care companies in the Mid-Atlantic region. For our listeners who don't know, can you provide some background on the company?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So the company was founded back in 1988 by Debbie Johnson, who was a nurse working in a local hospital. And she kept seeing this, you know, this kind of this pattern of how her elderly patients kept rotating back. It's kind of like, hey, thought you were just discharged home. What are you doing back here? So great entrepreneurial mindset. She saw that unmet need in the community and she started Care Advantage. And so today, you know, we carry forward that genetic code of care and we provide personal care, skilled and staffing services throughout the Mid-Atlantic region with over 30 offices. And in 2020, served over 10,000 patients through a care family of more than 8,000 caregivers and care team.
So recently, Searchlight Capital Partners reached an agreement to acquire a majority stake in Care Advantage. Tell me a little bit about what that does for your company and what that means for, you know, the next phase.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the first thing is that, you know, I'll start out saying that like we're incredibly aligned around that continued mission that we just spoke about, right? I mean, We've been in business at Care Advantage for decades now, and so you know we're going to continue that mission of care to serve the community. So you're absolutely locked step on that mission, and you know what Debbie started, we'll continue to carry the torch on that. And Searchlight has worked successfully in partnership with you know leading corporate and family owned businesses throughout the world, including a number in the healthcare sector. So this is right in their wheelhouse. And they spent a lot of time researching, preparing for their next big investment in healthcare, and that landed them squarely in the home. You know, they recognized that need for high-quality home-based healthcare services and for all payer sources. And this is obviously a need that was amplified you know, during the pandemic. And but alongside, I mean, it's just you know, it's the lowest cost and preferred setting of choice. So. They're smart guys. They saw that and they knew that. And so, and then as for like what that means for us, you know, our partnership, it's huge. It's a host of things. I mean, there's the obvious, right? Significant financial support and a really strong balance sheet for us to expand and really magnify our effort and what we've been doing and what we're going to do. Also, just as important, it provides, you know, a platform of insights, analytics, analysis. I mean, things that we just couldn't get to and tap into in the past. And just a great thought partnership on how we're going to get better and just and how we go about our work every day.
So normally Care Advantage is the buyer. Your company has been quite bullish when it comes to acquisitions. When purchasing, what makes a company an attractive acquisition target?
Yeah, we were, especially running up in before COVID, were quite acquisitive in which we 12 acquisitions in the course of 2 years. So we were busy. So yeah, it's when we're looking at, you know, going back to, you know, what is an attractive acquisition target. So a number of things, multitude of variables, kind of this equation. We have, you know, obviously an investment thesis, and you know, within that, some of some of the variables in that equation are cultural fit, the geographic considerations. So is this a spoke that fills out density in our current geography, or is this a new platform and a hub per se for a new market? What does it mean for expanding our overall service delivery systems and, you know, what we would call kind of our continuum of care? What it means for our ecosystem of our current office and clinical teams, how does it impact our team? Does this make us better? And then also implications for our partners in the market. So I'm thinking both payers and providers alike. And of course, you know, there needs to be sound financial fundamentals with that target and, you know, that care delivery know-how. We're looking for folks and companies that are not turnarounds, but can help us get better. And so make us smarter in delivering care.
So something you just mentioned, and it's definitely something we have to talk about, is the pandemic's disruption to M&A activity. And it's something that your company saw as well. Can you talk about this disruption to the M&A activity, and has that turned around now, or what are you seeing now?
Yeah, without question, it definitely slowed down our M&A effort in 2020 and early 2021. As most, you know, we spent a lot of our time, you know, more so our energy and time looking inward to ensure we were creating a safe service delivery system for our families and care team. And so also, I believe, you know, through the case for a number of our potential M&A targets, COVID created some variability for them in their financial outlooks and trends. So with that, I believe that things have started to smooth out a bit from that landscape. And over the past 6 months, for sure, we've ramped up the activity significantly and have a very, very active pipeline. And I anticipate, especially now being part of Searchlight, just a number of acquisitions ranging in size starting in Q4 this year.
So you just mentioned that, you know, you're going to have a pretty active pipeline. Do you kind of have any goals around this, any like specific numbers or targets that you want to hit? Or are there any kind of geographical locations that Care Advantage would want to expand into more?
Yeah. So, you know, taking it a step further, and again, you know, we put together kind of that just recently, that refreshed 5-year roadmap. And over the next many years, I mean, we're going to continue to expand our continuum of care, right? So the types of services and the suite of services that we provide in the home, definitely going to build density, firm believer in building density in our current geographies, getting stronger there. And it's good for our care teams. It's good for our partners, like our payers, but also without question, we're going to be looking at for pathways into new markets. So this is all still, you know, a bit of a work in progress, but a great directional roadmap around this. And don't be surprised if we take some bold moves here in the future.
Definitely. We will be on the lookout for that. To shift gears just a little bit, you know, it's something that I think has been on most healthcare leaders' minds is, you know, the Delta variant and ways to deal with that and, you know, how to protect their staff and, you know, how to protect their patients. How is Care Advantage dealing with the Delta variant? Many of the providers that I've had the opportunity to talk to are throwing their efforts around encouraging staff to get vaccinated, but a lot have shied away from doing a formal vaccination mandate. But can you just tell me a little bit about what Care Advantage is doing in particular?
Yeah, it is quite the topical just topic and timely, right? And so, you know, so for the last year and a half, you know, more than a year and a half now, we've provided a big effort, big lift around encouraging vaccination, employing every channel at our disposal we could think of to create awareness, debunk myths, to be a support and an enabler around the vaccination. And from one-on-one calls between our teams and our nurses And with every caregiver, every single caregiver, whether that's, you know, a CNA or a therapist or a nurse, to consistent social media blitzes, online resources, to on-site vaccination clinics. And obviously, a big shout out to our CareVantage team from the clinical, operational, HR, you name it. It's been like this huge team endeavor and a really massive push. And initially, like most home care providers, we did not have a formal mandate. But as you're aware, just this week in some of the states and communities we serve are formally moving towards the mandate. So our approach and policies, it's a bit fluid right now, but are being updated as we speak. And we want to keep everyone safe, but also we do not want to create a vacuum of care in the community. So per stated, it's fluid. There's no silver bullet to this, but we'll get there and in partnership with all the stakeholders involved.
I think that it's interesting that you mentioned that because it is something that is changing day by day by day. You know, we're talking today in August, but, you know, things might look different in September. So I think that it is important that you've noted that, you know, things are changing on a daily basis. So between the American Rescue Plan for Older Americans Act and the American Jobs Plan, the Biden administration has thrown considerable weight around funding home and community-based services. What impact do you think that this will have on the home-based care industry?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just feeding into the general narrative in healthcare and that care in the home, rightfully so, is becoming a center stage topic for America. And you know, this is top of, you know, just overall mind awareness, and will only create more opportunities for us to continue to make a career in care, one that is sought after and viewed as a true healthcare professional, and not what is maybe deemed as unskilled or low certification. It's something that makes a profound, profound difference. And, you know, fund care in the home, the setting of choice for patients and families alike, and invest in the health of the companies that support, develop, and carry that torch for care in our communities. So it's we're certainly moving in the right direction. A lot of work to go, but I think it just feeds into the general trend of healthcare delivery and where that's best served.
So one thing that I really wanted to talk about today was your work around value-based arrangements and value-based care. Last year, CareVantage and Anthem kicked off an innovative pay-for-performance pilot program, which was aimed at caring for Anthem's long-term services and supports members. Can you talk about how the relationship between your two organizations came about before we get into, you know, the program itself? Talk about that history.
Yeah, and as any journey, you know, just didn't happen overnight. So a lot of steps and stages to this. You know, it started with conversations with parts of the innovation team to this, you know, terrific continued partnership with the care coordination team and the provider network teams. And, you know, there's always, you know, a myriad of folks involved. And it was something that, you know, we were very intentional on, whether it was market president, you know, the leaders of care coordination, the care coordinators, the nurses themselves, provider network, the innovation teams, just ensure that, you know, we were building trust and credibility all along the way. And it's kind of funny. You remember the first conversations felt a little bit like seventh grade dance, you know, in which, you know, everyone, very, you know, there wanted to be on the dance floor, but honestly, not something where there's a lot of examples where personal care and the payer have spent really concerted time and energy together. So from the get-go, we shared data, very open, very transparent, put together an integrated care program that we called Home Care Plus, and then just kind of fed this, I'd say, consistent communication between our care teams and as we're all part of that, you know, a successful plan of care.
So the pilot program has been around since last year. What have been your main takeaways from this program?
Yeah, it's, I can speak a little bit about it. I mean, it's, of course, you know, we went into it with a partnership mentality. And so the willingness to try, to pilot, said, hey, we're ready to test and learn. And we know that the economics are going to come along with it. And so, you know, for example, some of the things that we did was we took a hard look at, you know, our delivery system. By the way, when you do something like this, you got to show up and you got to be, you know, make sure you have strong outcomes and you do what you say you're going to do. So, you know, we took a look at that. Hey, in the home, it's a driver's seat to impact the social determinants of health. So we looked at six key factors: the environment, behavioral, psychosocial, function, health, and biohealth, I should say, and financial. And so we kind of fused that into the way that we were pulling our data together, and we stratified our shared membership with Anthem. And this is, you know, I touched on a little bit earlier, that kind of integrated care coordination. So top 25% sickest and frailest, based on really a kind of an axis of number and severity of illnesses to that kind of functional, behavioral, and activity limitations. And then so we call this our high touch group. And challenges might include, you know, morbid obesity, CHF, dementia, certainly, you know, needs almost all ADLs. And we really focus and concentrated on that. So that was a key takeaway for us, is that, you know, you can't boil the ocean, right? It's like, you know, hone in on the folks and the population and membership that you can make the most immediate impact for now. Because, you know, both were looking at what will these results look like 1 year out. And, you know, this wasn't just right off the bat, kind of like an annuity of a 10-year plan. But it's like, you know, we needed to show progress immediately. And something too, I mean, it's, you know, and this was a pay-for-performance program. And, you know, we're obviously trending towards a value-based care in general, not just speaking about this, just payer specifically. And, you know, some of the things that, you know, we take a look at, it's built around things that really matter to the member, to the payer, to us as a provider. So look at performance indicators. What are your efficiency metrics? Member outcomes. You know, I could say that 20 times and I wouldn't say it enough. Patient care, safety, and service indicators. And all those things are incredibly important. And another key learning was, when you're talking about human beings taking care of other human beings, be human. So early and often, you know, infuse the stories and the anecdotes, real stuff, what's happening in that collective effort. And I got an example here, if we got a moment.
Yeah.
There was a patient, irritable bowel syndrome. And so just, you know, really, you know, chronic severe diabetes, morbid obesity, multiple falls. And this member had suffered for years with symptoms of IBS and pain management. And in less than a year, four trips to the emergency department due to pain. And what we were finding too is that this was, you know, what you'd see in the data, but whenever you really got to interact with this person, this member had lost faith in the healthcare system because they didn't feel like they were, you know, getting the direction that they needed. And also with irritable bowel syndrome, it's something that it's just quite an embarrassing thing, right? So they were very cautious about, you know, where would they go, at what time, and just, you know, which settings they would go to and everything like that. And so anyway, we put a number of interventions and, you know, paired them with a nurse on our clinical team had expertise in that condition, took that member to a new GI specialist, which was really important because we were able to find a different plan of care there, wellness and breathing techniques to better cope with pain, and a dietitian appointment was scheduled. And also educated on what, you know, when the proper time was to go to the ER, and but then what were other options to care for that individual in the home. So this customized plan of care, you know, gave this person, this member, you know, hope back, you know, in the healthcare system, which, you know, was for us, it was, you know, a pairing of Anthem, their primary care physicians, and us. So it was this great win. And this is just one example. And it was something that we would have these on a weekly basis that we'd really celebrate around. So anyway, but I know this is, as you can tell, love this topic. Another thing too, like takeaways, right, is what's important to the payer, right? So enhanced member experience. We just talked about that. That is key. That is chief. You know, membership growth matters, risk adjustment, optimizing, you know, the payment plans that they're on, and managing the MER. So these are things that are important. I was really happy to say that, you know, in a year of a pandemic, you know, we were able to according to baseline, we're able to reduce our ER visits by close to 15%. Caregiver consistency was in the high 80s. Membership satisfaction, which was, we're really excited to see, was 87%, and then almost a 50% reduction in falls. And these are things that, you know, obviously can be well fused into any of those topics on what produces value for the member and also to the payer.
So value-based care is still relatively rare in the home-based care space. Can you talk about why that is and if you see that changing? Obviously, Care Advantage is doing a lot in this space.
Yeah, home care is still on a journey, right? And a journey towards being a legitimately respected part of the healthcare delivery system. That's taking flight, taken serious steps over the past decade, but it's still well in development, right? And so in the key decision makers when it comes to policy, larger healthcare providers, and of course our partners and our payers, they're doing more than just listening now, but they're taking action towards recognizing the home as the ideal setting for care. So the data, if you will, burden of proof, is showing outcomes and indices of well-being and satisfaction are there. And it's more than a compelling story at this point. It's something that can be essentially just fused into the underwriting. And it's how large providers and payers can take care of their population in a smarter way. And of course, I believe that's in the home.
What bearing, if any, has the pandemic had when it comes to value-based arrangements and home-based care?
Yeah, and again, this is the progress of this. So from pay for performance towards value-based care, and again, something that we're talking early and often around is that don't pay us by the hour, but pay us for our outcomes. And of course, and we should be paid appropriately for that type, building that type of and creating that type of value with the others in the system. So, but there's a continued push for care in the home. And so, what is it? The ARP study of 9 out of 10 prefer home as their place, to age in place, and must be much higher at this point. And so matching those preferences and the positive economics behind it now, many say no margin, no mission, and that holds true for all parties involved in this healthcare equation.
What is your advice for home-based care providers who are looking to take on more value-based arrangements? What do they need to know in order to see success?
Yes. So get ready for effort. So this is something where you really need to designate people, resources, time, energy. And just a couple of quick bullet points here would be partnership mentality, open sharing data and information, know and understand their business, right? So, be really knowledgeable. And this should have been on top. Remember, everything comes back to their members and their members' well-being, because when that happens and we provide a better experience for their membership, our membership, then everyone wins.
So I want to talk about this pilot program that you're doing with AMP. What is the future of it? What's next?
Yeah, it'll be, I'm happy to say, a continuation of such. And we're at a point where there's lots of learnings. We're only a little over a year now into this partnership. And so there'll be continued refinement. What worked well? What was not as high impact as we expected? Let's carve that out. And not just from an incentive arrangement, but also how did we deliver results, points of collaboration? How do we do that more efficiently, faster, more high impact? And so it's really always about getting better. And we're still at that kind of level one. I would designate kind of a marginal upside and no downside risk. But at some point, sharing in that downside risk and sharing in that claim savings, that's really, what we see as kind of that future pathway.
As a CEO, what is your focus for the rest of 2021?
I mean, right at the top of the order is staying vigilant in the fight against COVID, right? So, that's something that there's going to continue to be waves. And so we're going to be ready to provide care regardless of what's happening in regards to kind of the external variables of the pandemic. So ensuring we're doing our part to keep our families and communities safe. And then in the same vein, also, how are we hitting our growth and quality goals for 2021? So, you know, life didn't stop. You know, it's still imperative that we grow as a company and that we get better. And so, and of course, you know, now being part of Searchlight, those initial phases of value creation and where we're going, which is really exciting, and in which, you know, there's a host of investments in people and process and technology to lay the groundwork for just where we're going to be a number of years from now.
Tim, before we end our conversation today, is there anything that we haven't talked about that you would like to?
You know, I think we covered the bases pretty well. There's a lot of good content in there for sure. Yeah, I think it's all there.
Well, then I think that is a great place to end our conversation today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Disrupt. For more news and insights on the home health, home care, and hospice industries, subscribe to our daily or weekly newsletters at homehealthcarenews.com. Thanks again.